You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Cale Hills. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host, and my guest today is Paul Scheer. Someone improv fans might know from such classic teams as Gigantic Man, the First Herald team, Hammerhead, Robot TV, Manifest Destiny, Cowbot, and a little team I like to call Respecto Montalban. Welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you for having Manifest Destiny, not my team.
Oh, the internet's wrong.
The internet is wrong. I'm going to
hop on the internet right now and correct that.
I'm always fascinated by looking back on those team names because, you know, you were good, like the first team that I was on at UCB that was like the Gigantic Man came out of a class, like Besser taught a class. And at the end, it was like, you guys are a team. And then that team kind of broke off into two segments. It was like the Swarm and Cowbot, and like Cowbot was really like our launching team, and then Cowbot kind of became Respecto Montalban, and that team, or at least a version of that team, is who I'm still performing with now at UCB. So it's like it's been interesting that like of that entire time back, God, whenever that was, like, man, like before 2000, like we're still performing together, like me, Owen, Hubel, Riggle, Chad, I think have all been performing on the same team since Respecto.
That's fascinating to me, and that's something I wanted to ask you about, actually, because when I started interning at the theater, I interned on Wednesday nights, and I would watch Facebook.
Oh, Facebook, yeah.
Were you able to make the show last night?
I did, yeah. I did. And Facebook's an interesting show, because when we first came out to L.A., it was called MySpace. Obviously, things have changed. But the whole reason why we used to do an event day in New York. That was like, we kind of like launched that form in New York on Saturday nights. And we would do that every Saturday at 10. When we came out to LA, we were like, oh, the audiences in LA are not used to improv and they don't believe that what they're seeing is improv. And it was a tricky situation coming from New York. We were a lot bolder in what we were saying for, you know, benefit and deficit of that. Like we were just say, you know, it was not like the most PC kind of show, and you could make jokes. And the audiences in LA were very, like, very withholding. And we noticed when we first came out here and doing like Avente style stuff, we're like, oh, this audience doesn't get it. We need to like show them what we're doing improv. So the best way we could possibly do it was pull somebody up from the audience, interview them, show them like this is like this is not scripted, and then doing it. So it was funny. I was talking about this show the other day. It's like, it's a show that I love to do, but really was built out of a crutch for the audience to kind of get on board with us, because, and I think it's become a show that people see that is kind of a good introduction show to improv in a way, because you kind of see the scene that's like unlike magic where you don't want to see it. Like here, we're like, you see it.
Yes. If I have like family in from Missouri or something like that, that's a show that I will take them to, because it's so, I don't have to be like, so you're going to do three first beats.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
No, they get it.
You're not watching people do like a sound and movement opening or something. And by the way, I love all that sort of stuff.
Yes,
it was just
absolutely
interesting to, you know, to kind of figure out, because it's like the commerce aspect of these things. Like when we started UCB in New York, I'm sorry, I just derailed your whatever your question was going to be. But when we started in New York, it was like, how do we get people to this theater that no one knows about? And, you know, and what are they going to see? And like, you know, at this point, you know, even now, like, I think there's a cursory knowledge of what the UCB is. And if anything, I would hope it's even bigger than what we knew Second City to be, especially in New York and L.A. And I feel like we were working against that at all points. And that was something that Besser really kind of ingrained us early on. It was like we were producing, writing, and starring in our own shows, you know, which is amazing and great, like, work for everything that you do. But it was like coming up with like catchy names and stuff like that that would at least engage a person. Like, so when we do sketch shows, we really obsess about names and try to make funny names so that people would like see it in Time Out New York and be like, oh, I'll go see that based on a name. You know, like it was interesting, like just because that's part of the biggest battle is like you can perform a great show, but if no one's there to see it, or you know, it's it, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. I can easily imagine just like the differences in the early day, the way that builds a good work ethic into you to like, I don't know, take better care of the team and everything. One thing I wanted to ask about that was so interesting to me, because when you were talking about the transition to Facebook and everything, it was all about like, how can we take care of the audience? Have you had to deal with that in any way on the like internal side of things with the team performing with people for so long? I know my friends. I can't imagine a world where I would never not want to perform with them or not be surprised by them. Is that the experience of performing so long?
You know, it's great. Like, it's a safety net. It's, you know, no matter what goes on in your personal or professional life, to have this outlet to perform with people that you love to perform with is great. And, you know, now I'm somebody who is, you know, married with two kids. It's an outlet that I always have. It's like, so that to me, it's my hangout. It's like going to a bar. It's like going to a movie, but we're doing a show. And one of the cool things about our show is that it's evolved over time in the sense that like Charlie Sanders is now like a member of our team. And Charlie wasn't there early on. Charlie is like a recent member of our team. Seth Morris, when we moved out to LA, became a member of our team. Like, and Seth is a friend and was a friend before, but we brought him in. You know, it's like, it's so, and Jack McBrayer was like, you know, he's in and out when he's in New York and stuff like that, or when he was in LA. So it's sort of like we're always like kind of opening up. And the fun thing about this Wednesday night show is, for its benefit and deficit, the last couple of months have been a little bit crazy. Personal lives and work have all kind of interfered with this show. Mm-hmm. So we've done a lot of two-person shows. We've done a lot of three-person shows. And it's very rare to do the full complement, like the whole cast. So, but that's been so kind of fun and challenging. I'm like, okay, Charlie and I are going to do a two-person show now. I've never done a two-person show with Charlie. Oh, Seth and I are going to do a two-person or a three-person show. It's like, so it's super challenging still. And I think the audience, it's fun for the audience to see like, oh, wow, I just came to see the show and now it's just two of these people and I don't know who they are. And then you have these like great kind of drop-ins because it's like, all right, well, now maybe me and Nick Kroll doing a show, because we like in a panic, we're like, can we get somebody? Let's get Nick. And like, we only have two. Let's go do it. So it's fun.
Yeah. I guess this is like a very trite observation, but in that way, it's like literally impossible for improv to ever grow stale, because the very nature of it is like no show can ever be the same.
Yeah. I think, you know, for us, and maybe this is like I don't know, like I hate saying it because I don't want it to be cocky.
Okay, but, watch out.
But I think there's something about, I still think that we have bad shows and I think we have great shows, but I think our bad shows are way better than what our bad shows used to be. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think our bad show is like pretty watchable and an audience would leave going, that was a fun show.
Yeah.
And internally we're like, we could have done better there. So that's like the one thing I take pride in now, is like, at least I still could acknowledge that was not a good show, but I can also say like, I think the audience is entertained by that. So we win in that. And, you know, and there's a mentality too. And, you know, our show is broken into two halves, like separated by two interviews. And like last night, I definitely felt like, oh, this is a rocky first half. And there's a part of me is like, we need to take this back in the second half. It's very sports-like, not that I'm coming from a sports background, but this idea of like, all right, let's step it up, guys. Let's do it. And then conversely, whoa, that first half was amazing. And then we start playing real loose. And then the second half ends like shit. What I would rather it always be is that our second half ends strong, because that's what people walk out of the theater of. And you don't want them to be like, I should have left 20 minutes ago, you know, like, you know, or like the show should have ended 20 minutes ago. But yeah, that's like an interesting thing. I'm always in my head and, or, you know, I at least now, you know, I analyze it. I'm not like, we very rarely are backstage going like, what the fuck, you said that? Or, you know, like, a lot of the times it's like a lot of apologies. Like, oh, I'm rusty. Sorry about that. Oh, I missed that. What was that? You know, occasionally we would note each other and that would never be good. Like it was like one person in particular, but like, guys, we need to do more of this. Let's do. And then we'd all like, whoa, you know, get all irritated. But, you know, I think you self-regulate and you've done enough of these shows that you know when you're doing good and you're even doing bad. And you know, I think, yeah, it's interesting. It's like, it's interesting when you kind of like start noting yourself, you know, and set challenges for yourself too.
Yeah. That's funny to me that you were worried about that sounding cocky, because essentially what you said was like, I've become a better, more consistent performer over time through hard work and practice. So it sounds like you have like a pretty analytical approach, or like very thoughtful at least, to your own work and the show as a whole and your teams. Would you say that's true? Do you tend to be like analytical in general?
Well, you know, I came up studying at UCB. Just to give you like a brief moment of my background, like I came from this place called Chicago City Limits, which is a short form improv place, you know, very Wayne Brady style games. No offense to Wayne Brady. They're great, whatever. But every time a bell rings, you change a word, you know, totally. Jeopardy, stuff like that. And I went, a friend, me, Andy Daly, and a few other people that are not involved in the scene, so I won't mention them, but they, I was like, you gotta go see this UCB group. And we saw them, there were three people in the audience, you know, or something small. It was like less than 10. And like Tina Fey was like sitting in an ASCAT, and I didn't know Tina Fey, and no one knew Tina Fey because she wasn't Tina Fey at that point. She was just Tina. And it blew my mind. I was like, whoa, what is this? This kind of structured improv. And so I immediately took classes there. I was in like that first round of classes. And it was kind of, I always describe it like a little house on the prairie, which is a fucking dated reference. But it's like, it was a schoolroom in the sense that like I took classes with Besser, but that's all I took classes with. It was like I started at Besser and I never left Besser. So it was like class after class after class. It wasn't like, you know, and other people who were just starting were like starting with Amy, then going to Matt, then going to Ian, and then going to Besser. And like I started in Besser and I stayed in Besser. And then eventually went back to do an Amy class and went back to do an Ian class. But Matt Besser taught this very thought out style of improvisation. It was, you know, premise based improv. And so you would get very much in your head, like I'm setting up a who, what, where, I'm trying to like by the third line, we're into our game, you know, it's like, and I taught that. And I taught that when I taught at UCB. And I think it's the best way to learn improv because it's the most black and white way of going, this is what you need to do. And this is, and you can kind of help underline people, but then to be able to break away from that and have fun and not even know what you're doing sometimes is fun. Like, and that's where I'm at now. Like, and where I kind of evolved to in this group, you know, maybe we're improvising plots sometimes, maybe we're improvising just to fuck around with each other. Like it's sort of, it's inconsistent in that way. So I used to be a person that would sit on a back line going, what's my initiation? What's my character? What's an idea for a game? Like, you know, thinking all these thoughts. And now, and maybe it's because of the people I work with, but it's also like I am way looser. I'll come up with the smallest idea. And that was something that I always used to appreciate watching Matt and Ian, Matt Walsh and Ian Roberts perform, because he would come out and start painting a wall. And all of a sudden the scene would kind of evolve. But it was like this organic, you know, initiation. And I definitely cater to that. You know, with our show Facebook, because we're pulling from the audience, we're coming in with something, but I don't always know where it's going to go. But yeah, so it's I think when I'm the best, I'm doing a show that's 50-50. Like where I'm coming in with, I have a strong idea, and then I'm letting the other scenes just let it ride. So it's, you know, it's like, so yeah, so I try to like I try to balance that out, because I feel like I don't like being overly concerned about where the scene is going to go, because I trust all these people here and I want to be really open to that process. And I think it's more fun for the audience to see that too.
Yeah, that makes sense. That feels like very consistent with, I feel like, most people's experiences of learning UCB. Like the style is very much learn the rules so you can break it,
yeah,
kind of thing. And the last person and I were talking a lot about like that dichotomy between the brain and the gut, and yeah, like how do you navigate that. And I think the living in that 50-50 space makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, you described kind of this aha moment with improv where you saw ASCAT for the first time. What led you, going back even further, what led you to Chicago City Limits? Did you have like an aha comedy?
Yeah, well, I come from a divorced family, which is fine, but it's only to say that I spend the weekends with my dad. My dad lived in Queens, which is right outside of New York City, and one of the things that we would do, my dad was a cool, fun dad. So, you know, he was single and we would go into the city and see shows. like, he was like, let's go see a show. And you know, that was at a point where you could go affordably see, like, even Broadway shows. It wasn't like $75 a ticket. It was like, you know, it was cheap. And so in the – in like, literally the idea of, like, opening up the paper, looking at things, we were like, oh, Chicago City Limits is comedy. And then I saw that, and I was like, what is this? I've never – didn't even know it. You know, I was like wasn't even in high school at this point. You know, I just saw it. I was like, whoa. And then we just kept on going back and back and back. And they were, like, in a church basement doing this show, and I just – I loved it. I took classes there, and I lied when I took classes. I told them I was in college, and it was so clearly, like, not in college.
Did you need to lie? They were, like, not going to.
No, but yeah. Everyone was so much older. Like, there was no one even near college age in my class. Like, you know, so, like, by lying and saying I was in college, it at least aged me up a little bit, you know? It's like, but of course, it's like, one of my favorite moments from that was, like, you know, after class, I was hanging out with the people in my class, and, like, one guy, like, lit a joint, and we were in Central Park. And I was like, oh, my God, he's going to join. What is that? And they're like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, whoa. Like, well, I was like, I was so sheltered, and I didn't see joints. I didn't know what was going on. And I was like, these people are doing drugs in the park. We're going to get in trouble. Like, it blew my mind. I was like, yeah, I definitely betrayed my lie there, you know, because by just, like, my reaction to it. But, like, so, like, but, yeah, like, there was something so amazing to it. And the same way that I talked about, like, Facebook and taking care of the audience, that's what Chicago City Limits does. I imagine long-form improv was going on some level, but back in that time, it was interesting because it was sort of like, I'm seeing what you're saying, and I'm doing this thing. And I remember that I came out here with the two Andys, which was Andy Daly and Andy Secunda. Andy Secunda is, I guess, a producer on Goldberg's now. It performs in The Swarm and it still performs out here in L.A., I believe. And Andy Daly has done a bunch of stuff, too. And, like, but we came out with a sketch show with them, and Del Close is out here teaching a workshop. And I remember the only time I ever saw Del Close is in LA, and he was sitting outside in front of, like, a theater in, like, a folding chair. And, you know, like, that's Del Close. And I knew nothing of Del Close because I wasn't even really in that. I knew of it, like, Del Close is someone. Mm-hmm. Del Close is that guy from Ferris Bueller. Del Close is an improv guy, but I didn't know what was going on in Chicago. And we talked to him. He's like, you're Chicago City Limits. You guys are still doing that short form stuff. You will learn. You will learn. and I was like, well, he doesn't know what was that, you know? And I remember when I was at Chicago City Limits and I finally got in, I was like the youngest person that got into that group. And it was so fun. But I remember when UCB came to town, there was like this real like ruffling of feathers because it was sort of like, what's long? I mean, long form. Like, I remember like some guy at our place is like, long form is just our games without blackouts. They just don't do blackouts. They just like, and that's it. And we'll do long form. And it was just like stringing together games without blackouts. But you were still doing introductions to games. Like, all right, next thing. Yeah. So it was like so dumb. But I think it was, you know, for me, seeing Chicago City Limits, it was an eye-opening experience because it was a type of comedy that I'd never had seen. And in New York, that was it. There was no UCB, you know? So I think that's the thing too. It's like, it was the only game in town and then it ceased to become the only game in town. And then it kind of got run out of town.
Yeah. That's just the general trajectory of like comedy and the way that it's been more accessible. Even I remember, so I've done some like tour co-shows and something that's fascinating to me is when I was in college, I knew what long form was and stuff, but now you go to these college campuses and everyone, for the most part, is like listening to every comedy podcast. Yeah. They knew who Lauren Lapkus was before she blew up in the way that she has now. The sheer amount of improv in the cultural lexicon is crazy. Can you talk a little bit about, so you're someone obviously who's like used that in a lot of really interesting ways in actual like artistic output instead of in a church basement.
Yeah.
So what's the, how is improvising on a set different from improvising in a show?
Well, I think that, you know, the thing that I feel like is, it's interesting because I feel like people want to use your improv and where we first started to feel is, like thing about improv and using it on set or whatever was in commercial auditions. That was the only thing that was kind of going on for all of us back in the day. It was like, can you get a commercial agent? Can you audition for commercials? And you would go in and UCB people were the favorites of these commercials because you go in, you just like rip apart the script and have fun. And so that was like the first taste of, oh, this can actually benefit my career. I have a leg up over these other people because I can read a thing for like Morongo Casino and at least add a joke or make it funny. And so much so, I remember Jackie Clark, who's a really funny, talented writer and improviser that was on Respecto with us. She improvised something and they took the whole thing and they put it in the commercial and they didn't cast her in the commercial and they mm-hmm. paid her out. And that, like, there's like weird stuff going on like that. But that was my first, like, kind of like, oh, wow, you can do this. And now, you know, I luckily I came up as like comedy was making a comeback, you know, like the time. And I kind of put it as like Wedding Crashers and 40-Year-Old Virgin were like the two like shows that kind of or movies that came out that were like, oh, they're improvising. And it's comedy is back. R-rated comedy is back. Mm-hmm. And like things started to change with that. And that was like at a time when I was also doing comedy and looking up at that and going, I want to do that. And I think there's two styles of improv in TV and film. And one is like constructive improv and some is like really like destructive improv. Like, and I think it's sort of like, and it, I think improv is best when you have a director who has a very clear vision, knowing what they want to do. And you have actors that are also on the same page that just know, like, improv I think is best used to, like, as a seasoning in a scene, like to explode it. But I think the last thing you want to do, and I think it feels sweaty, is when you watch like people just like riffing. It almost takes you out of it. I feel like there are movies that I watch where I'm like, I'm just watching people like do bits. And I don't find that to be as funny as a really well-written movie with moments where like and it's a subtle distinction. It's like, but I feel like that's the thing that I'm like, I feel like improv has gotten like in this thing. It's like, well, improvise it. Well, it's not a good script, but we'll improvise when we get there. We'll improvise when we get there. I still think you need good material, and then you can improvise on top of it, and you can make it better. Like, The League was a show that I did on FX with, like, Nick Kroll and Steve Ranazzisi and Mark Duplass and John Lajoie and Katie Asselton and Jason Manzoukas, where we improvised. It was like Curb. We had these 12-page outlines. I wrote some of those outlines. But the thing was, we always had the structure of the scene. We always had the gimmicks of the scene, and we could, how we got there, how we said things. And that, but you know, that's also through the watchful eye of a guy who came off of and created, you know, he co-created Curb with Larry David and he created this show. Like improv in the right hands. I know this is a very long answer. I hope I'm making sense with it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, in the right hands is great, and it's an effective tool. And The League is a show that I think people don't feel like it's improvised. People are like, oh, that was not that. Like, yeah, we never had dialogue. We had beats. We had suggestions of lines, but it was a thing. And I think part of the way that we would do that is we would shoot. Like, every scene would take about 2 hours, and we'd do, like, a run. Keep that, lose that, let's do this. You can add in there, and we'd find something, and we'd polish it, and we'd polish it. I just think that keeping the cameras rolling sometimes, it just makes it messier, you know, and you can find great stuff. And there's not to say there's not funny stuff, but I think lately the thing that I'm really responding to is I like improvising from a character point of view, not from a joke point of view. And I think there's like two things. It's like, am I a character making a joke or am I a character that is saying something in character? I find the in character stuff so much more fulfilling. But we also live in a culture where it's like people want jokes. So now we're just making jokes. And I don't know. It's tricky because I'm sure I laugh at that too. I just like, but when I'm directing stuff, when I'm producing stuff, like that's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for like, let's just roll. Let's just see what we get. You know, like, you know, I don't mind a fun run and I think that's good. And I like it. I like improv on set. I just don't. But I think to me, the best way of making improv work is to help define your character. Like a lot of the times when I'm doing movies and stuff, it's like, this is a weirdly worded thing that you want me to say. Can I just say it my own way? I'm going to get everything you want in here. Let me just say it my own way. It's more conversational. It's more naturalistic. And that was one thing that I really learned on Veep this season, working on that show, also from one of the guys who created Curb with Larry. Strongly written show. Amazingly funny show.
Precise language.
Precise language that he is, you know, Dave Mandel is a genius and is like, throw it away. This sounds too written. This sounds too written. And you're doing these not fun runs, but these sloppy runs where it's like overtalk each other, drop things. And that pacing and that feel allowed the show, which is really well written, to have this air of improvisation to it. It's not about exacting things. You don't want to fuck up a joke. But and that was, to me, the perfect distillation of it. You had 10 writers on set who are popping out great alts. You have people on set that are doing really good improv. And like that's, I think, to me, that's like really exciting. Mm-hmm. I like that. Like, and I know it's a very long-winded answer to get to where it is, but I've seen it in different ways. And I feel like improv to make things more naturalistic and to come from a place of character to me is like my sweet spot.
What up, Jabroniacs? This is Dan Black from the Comedians of Wrestling podcast, the podcast where the world of comedy collides head-to-head with the world of professional wrestling. Past guests on the show have been WWE superstar Dolph Ziggler, WWE superstar John Morrison, WWE superstar Damian Sandow, plus hilarious comedians Lucas Brothers, Dante Germain. The list goes on and on and on. You can listen to the podcast every single Thursday. We are part of the UCB Podcast Network, jabronis.
Hey, improv fans. If the suggestion for your next show is beer, maybe initiate your scene with something like, check it out, they've got Bronx beer on tap at this bar. It's the start of a great scene, and ordering a Bronx is a great way to start any night out. And Bronx is now the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information, and be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. And scene.
Yeah, that's interesting to me because it sounds like there's so many different ways for improv to manifest in a more structured setting, and it sounds like some sets are really looking for just like the currency of improv,
yes.
Like how do we get the jokes, and other people where it sounds more successful, like on Veep or on the League, is more about honoring like what's the spirit of improv because that's what makes it. Good.
Well, and you know, you and I worked together on this this thing, Drive Share, that Rob and I created, Rob Hubel and I created, and that was a situation. This is kind of goes to this where we had a car, and we had that car rigged with like 8 cameras, and it was much more open ended. It was like we're just going to do scenes here, and we know we'll tape for 20 minutes, and we'll cut it down to 4 or 5, and we can do a lot of that work in editing. And that was like, and that's a scenario where I feel like. We covered ourselves. You have all these cameras
structured,
and
you got it.
But you have total freedom and we can capture everything. Cause I think also some of the, you know, and that like some of the fun of it is like getting it on the first time and those real reactions and those moments that you've, cause I think that's the hardest thing sometimes with improv and the translation to TV. Like,
yeah.
You know, like ASCAT's one of my favorite shows. I like our show that we do. I would never want to put it on TV. I think that sometimes is a problem with some podcast stuff too, because it's like oh, it's fun because we're all fucking around, but I don't know if everything needs to be committed to tape either, you know. But
yeah.
But that being said, like I think there are styles of it, and I think when you're doing narrative stuff, improv is like the best thing to be used to from a character point of view and to add jokes and to be in the moment and all that sort of stuff. But I think we wanted to set up that Drive Share thing to be like, here's a premise, go wild on it. And you know, you did, I think one of the things you guys did was like just totally. Just it was like, let's roll and let's see what we get, and we just did, and it was great, and being able to cut it down, and having, maybe I should say, go back and say, and having somebody who knows how to cut improv too. That's the other thing too. It's like it's easier to
you know
to be in that edit room
sift
and go
through
like
that.
Because the
structure of that was like you said, perfectly set up for it, as opposed to a set where it was like, okay, have fun with it, but also hit this mark and do this and do that. So you were talking about kind of your current thought, obsession, I don't know what the word is, but like character stuff and approaching things from character. Can you speak a little bit more to like what that process means to you?
Well, to me, I think like the best stuff in comedy, like the things that are the most memorable to me. And this is not a thought that I have now that I'm saying it to you. I guess I'm articulating something I guess I always think is like, are just really great characters. Like that's, you know, it's like I think I'm less prone to remember a movie than I am a character from a movie, you know? And I think that works on many different levels, but it's sort of like, you know, and I think that that's the mark of like a great comedy. It's like there are great comedy movies, but there are great, when you have a great comedy character, that's kind of worth its weight in gold. It's like then you've known you've done something because the character feels realized and real. And I think sometimes I sometimes get frustrated because I think it's a less showy art like to improvise within character. Because it's sort of like you're just playing it, you're not like You're not trying to like, you're not like going like, yeah, it's like Knight Rider, but instead of a car, you got a bicycle, and that bicycle's a dick. You know, it's like whatever. You know, it's like, you know, it's like that kind of stuff. And I do laugh at it. It's great. I love it. I'm not against it. It just sort of like, but I feel like it's so much more fulfilling when you can see a, when you feel like the joke is not a joke that a character is making, but the character being himself, and that's the comedy of it.
Yeah, I feel like something that like I'm on Herald Night right now. Something that I've had to get used to is having this mentality shift of even like, why am I doing this? It's not just, I love getting laughs. Everybody loves getting laughs, but I'm also interested in creating something compelling outside of that.
Well, it's, and I think that like, you know, sometimes when you're on bad teams and when you're on teams that aren't meshing right, like you are competing for jokes. Like, you know, it's like, it's like who can, you know, we had Mike Myers sat in with Respecto one night. It was weird. He was hanging around the theater and he was like, I want to play. And Bassett was like, I'll sit in with Respecto. And I will say that he came and, you know, it was interesting. Like he had our own thing. Respecto had our own thing. And in a way, like, I think one of the best things about us, we were so cocky. We're like, we're not going to cater to him. He'll spin in with us or he won't.
Keep like, up, Myers.
Yeah, and you know, he really, like, played, like, I felt like I never watched a guy do more assist work than Michael. You know, he's, like, on that stage, and he would come in, add to a scene, be super funny, and then leave, like, and he, like, you know, he wasn't doing any of the three, like, two-person scenes, but he was adding and doing really, really funny stuff, and I really had appreciation for that, and I think I always look back at that as being, like, a really interesting way to improvise, because he wasn't there to showboat. I also saw celebrities come through the theater who totally showboated, and that's fine, and that's great, like, but it was interesting, because I think that that ethic of support each other, I auditioned for SNL one time. I auditioned a handful of times, but one of the auditions, it was the weirdest scenario. It was like, Lauren wants to see you all improvise. So we put together like a makeshift Harold team.
He loves when you do that on the show.
Oh, of course. I mean, well, it was an odd thing because I want to put together a makeshift Harold team to do a Harold for Lauren. Now, these people I don't know. Me and McBrayer, we knew each other. And there are a handful of other people. And we met maybe 15 minutes before the show, and we're like, what are we going to do? You're from Chicago. What do you do? How do you do it?
Yeah.
I'm from New York. I do it like this. I'm from this. And we really consciously were like, let's all agree not to showboat. Like, and that was the thing. And I will say that that was a terrible situation to be in, up there with strangers for one of the most coveted jobs of all time. And having to be like, all right, I'm going to try to play to make this team look good. And to everyone's credit, everyone did an amazing job at not showboating, stealing focus, and it felt organic, and it felt like people had moments. And, of course, the one person who decided that he would not do that was Fred Armisen, and he did a five-minute piece at the end of the show of characters, and he's the one who got hired.
Did the best Harold possible.
In that situation, 100%, yeah.
But I don't remember the last time I saw Harold on SNL.
Yeah, exactly. But it's an odd thing. It's like, it's sort of like, it's like play a pickup, like play, we want to like hire somebody, like, it's like a pickup basketball game or something like that. And it's like, well, you know, like the importance of team is not important on SNL. You're not going to hire the whole team. As a matter of fact, they have a history of almost separating teams, you know, from
You
know, and so it was weird. So we weren't friends. We weren't performing together. It was an odd situation. But I agree with you. Like, wanting to create something good, I feel like, and wanting to get laughs. And that was why I think, you know, performing with this group that I really love, it's really fun because there's a safety in it. And we get to have fun. And I know that there's a show where I can really take the backseat and maybe play more straight man roles. And, you know, somebody's going to be, like, knocking it out of the park. And we go back. We make each other laugh. We have, like, little runners that go through all of our shows, you know, or come back a lot that just are there to kind of make us laugh. And I think there's funny to the audience, too. But, yeah, I don't know. It's sort of like, I think in the Harold is a very inorganic form, in my opinion, that is sort of like I like the more loose, like, why do we have to commit to this thing that I don't like? Like, I did this scene. It sucked. Like, we have to come back to it two more times.
Yeah.
Like,
you sure?
Why am I being penalized by this form? Like, you know, like, And why can't we go and explode something and then come back and find the thing? Like, let the cream rise to the top, you know? I don't know. But yeah, so I think it's like this challenge, because I think Harold is so confining that you're forced to be like, well, if this is not working, I'm gonna push harder and harder instead of just knowing, oh, well, that didn't work. Bye. See you later. And like, let's edit that. You know, it's like, I don't know if I answered that question.
Yeah, but. No, I mean, what that has me thinking about is just like being on a Harold team and the culture of the theater at the moment being like, of course you want there to be kind of something to be a cap to the training program. So that makes sense to me. But I imagine, you know, back in the day before there was maybe the same like kind of social pressure to like be on a team or something, that playfulness was probably more present and probably more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were doing shows at UCB when they first started. It was like I was doing a minimum of 5 shows a week, sometimes twice a night. And it was different incarnations. And they were all for fun. And sometimes they were for audiences of like 6 people, you know. So there was a sense of, and I missed out on all this. I missed out on all the competition of UCB. Our competition was different. It was, you know, who got SNL? Who's on Conan? Who's doing this? You got a speaking part there? Oh, my gosh. You know, who got a commercial agent? Like, it was not – it was external theater. It was, like, internally at the theater, it was really fun. And, so I've avoided all that. And I know that that's a thing that is a big thing in making sure you stay on your Harold team, making sure that you're a team player, making sure that you are at your rehearsals, and making sure you're, like – that's, you know – and it's hard because – really, the things that you remember are the best, or at least the way I was, it was the best teams. Those are the teams that existed. Like, Respecto was good on Harold's, and then we got our own show. And The Swarm was good at Harold's, and they got their own show. Like, that was the graduation was when you linked with a team that you liked, you would hopefully go off and go get to go do your thing. And that's why I think you see, like, great teams come out of Cage Match, because it is a low stakes. It's low stakes, high stakes. It's like, do whatever you want. Have fun. And these two teams that put themselves together. And Matt Besser always said it to me, like, and, you know, look, we crushed a team that was really at a point, there was no reason to crush that team. It was that it was Cowbot was a functioning team of really good performers. And we crushed it because it wasn't exactly right. And and we wanted there's people and contingents that wanted to work with each other. And the best move I ever made was that. The best move I ever made was breaking out of the UCB created team to make my own team. And Respecto, we performed outside of the theater first, and then we got into the theater. And it was a bit, you know, drama, UCB drama. But it was a worthwhile thing, because, like Amy Poehler said it, life is too short to play with people that you don't like. And you're not going to do good shows with those people. And maybe that's what the thing you have to do to get started or get noticed here. But the truth is, if you put yourself together and you're doing good work, that will get acknowledged in people. And that's what's going to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. You keep referring to Respecto as like a safety net. And just I think that's so important. This space should be like a landing pad, not a destination.
Right. And when you're in this zone where you're competing and you have to stay on teams and the teams can be I was on the Harold committee, which I don't even know if that's still a thing here, you know,
but yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, you know, and that was a nerve wracking thing, you know, because you're putting together teams and you're taking apart teams and you're trying to build these teams. But the truth is like, good teams can't be built. You can only find good players, and hopefully the good players will find themselves, or after seeing them, you go, maybe they'll be good together. You get like, I always felt like a successful team was when you could find at least 3 people from one team and you could merge them with 3 people from another team and be like, that's a team.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that was like, I think or at least my way of looking at it. I was like, this team that I just put together that is all new people is not going to work, but it will work a little bit and we'll see.
And we'll get there. I think we're getting close to wrapping up. I had a couple just like kind of random questions.
Sure.
What is the can you describe in as much detail as you would like the worst show you've ever done?
Oh yeah. I mean, those are the shows that are burnt into your brain. Back in the day, UCB revamped a show that Besser created in Chicago called The Real World, which was an improvised version of The Real World, which is, you know, an MTV reality show about like different personalities living in a house. Again, in a great way to kind of pull an audience, that was a show that existed and to great success in New York simply because it was a gettable concept. The Real World was still relevant at that point. it was a bunch of characters, and I was the director of that. So I would be calling scenes, I basically like side coaching scenes. That was the role of the director. And it was super fun. But we were so confident in the show. This show killed. Every Saturday at 10 o'clock, we were just knocking it out of the fucking park. And one of the people in that group, Betsy Stover, was like from Minneapolis. And she's like, oh, there's a Minneapolis improv festival and comedy festival. We got to go and perform. And we're like, oh, with our killer show? Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
And so we go to the Mall of America to perform at Knuckleheads, which is a comedy club. And
all right,
we
there's
get
your
up,
first sight.
Yeah, we get up to do this show. And, you know, it's a show with costumes and whatever. And within the opening minutes, like minutes, you know, not even five, we are heckled, like, kill yourself, the fuck off the stage. And it was this moment, because I'm the director of this thing, so I'm being able, I'm essentially serving as the blackout guy, and the other, like, you know, I'm moving the whole thing around. And there was something amazing about the audience hating us so much, but also knowing that we're all in it together. Like, it's like, you know, it's like I guess that scene like in the Blues Brothers where people are throwing bottles at them or whatever. It's like, we know we got to get the fuck out of here. But you know, it's like we got to finish a show on some level. That was traditionally the one of the worst shows. I will also say that Respecto is one of my favorite experiences in New York, but we could never perform when it counted. Like, and I say that in the world of Cage Match, I always felt like we would choke. Whenever we went to festivals, we would eat shit. And I don't know what it was. I don't know if we put too much pressure on ourselves. It was, we just would always just do, and I think the worst improv show you could do is a mediocre improv show. It's like where it's like, it makes people go, it's the reason why people go, I don't like improv. Not because it was like so bad that you're like, oh boy, it's just sort of like, it's neither here nor there, you know, and that's and I've definitely done a handful of those shows, but a lot of them came out of New York and doing like we did a show. I mean, this was an improvised show. It was a Torco show that we were hired at a wedding. So we had to do the night before the night before dinner. And it was at the most expensive restaurant in New York. I think it's called Danielle or Daniel. And we performed there and they were not into us. They were not into us doing our bits. I was like Dr. Phil, and we're doing a bit about a runaway bride. And clearly the mother of the bride had done this, but the groom's family hated it.
Yeah.
And it was like, and I'm performing in a restaurant, and we were only performing to get free food. We're like, this is great weekend. So we ate at the best restaurant in the world, like in a kitchen, like shoveling like this fancy hors d'oeuvres in our mouth to do the show that was just, you know, that. And so my rule of thumb to everybody would be, don't perform where they don't normally do improv shows. Like, it's like restaurants, art galleries, stand-up comedy clubs. Like, you got to protect yourselves because that is always the worst when you have an audience that's not in there to – because you can't explain it. You're just doing it. And Real World was a show where we were locked into the premise. We couldn't just stop and like address it.
I guess we'll edit and reset. Like,
yeah, it's rough.
All yeah. Right. I imagine to me, like when I show up at a bar and they start doing karaoke, I'm like, karaoke's fine, but you didn't tell me this was going to happen.
Yeah, I don't want to see that. Yeah, exactly.
So one of the worst shows I ever did was one that my family happened to be at.
Oh.
And I was curious at what point in like, because explaining doing comedy and improv is just kind of a tricky thing. And it sounds like you have like a pretty hip family. Was there a point at which they like, got it, or did they always get it?
My dad always got it. My dad was coming to shows all the time, and he would see the dumbest shows, like Robot TV, which was like TV for robots by robots. Made no sense. We would walk the audience all the time. My dad would come and see that show and support it. My dad listens to the comedy Bang Bang, you know, and How Did This Get Made and stuff. Like, my dad loves comedy. My mom... no, she didn't get it. I brought her to a show called Kilgore, which is like a UCB Halloween show. It was like bloody, super bloody show. And I was like, that will be something that they'll like because they'll get it. It's like a musical comedy thing. But then I forget how vulgar UCB is.
Yeah.
You know, and like I'm like, oh, yeah, right. That guy gets, you know, beat over the head by a dick. Like, I'm, you know, like, so my parents are like, oh, okay. But, you know, I think they were always supportive. I don't think that they always thought that there was any end to it. You know, it seemed like a fun hobby. For my mom, it seemed like a fun hobby. And, even I remember, like, when I was, like, doing Human Giant, my mom's like, oh, do you still wish you got SNL? And I was like, no, I'm, like, yeah. So psyched to be doing my own sketch show, like, right now. But, yeah, I mean, it's tough. Bringing parents to a show and no matter how the show is, you're not going to do as good as you want to do. And it's like, and they should have been there the week before because it was a better show. It's hard. It's hard. Whenever you have somebody in the audience that hasn't seen it, I still get that. Like, oh, they came to that show. I wish they came to another show, you know. And then I over-explain it and then I feel guilty because I'm like, do they assume that that's what I do all the time? Like this kind of mediocre show that they just saw? I'm like, oh, fuck this.
Yes, yeah, it's like you said, the worst show possible is a mediocre show. Because you know what it can be, and you just want them to connect to the magic.
And you're like,
of that.
I know, I just want to be able to have like people that I want that are being introduced to UCB, like to see me in the best show they can see. So they're like, oh, that's awesome. Not, oh, yeah, that's what I assumed it was. It's fine. Yeah, have fun. You know.
I'm also curious, is there a point, do you ever see yourself not doing improv?
No.
Like, yeah.
I love it. It's like, to me, the one of the things I think is the best element, and, you know, sadly, because we've sat on this slot for years now here at UCB and in New York, too, it's the best outlet. I don't want to stop doing improv. I think I love performing in front of an audience. I love getting up. I love, like, I think the people I'm always impressed with are the people who are so with it and current. I was lucky enough to kind of have a couple lunches with Mel Brooks, and his knowledge of the comedy scene was interesting. Like, he knew who Ron Funches was, and he knew who Milana Vanatrab was, and he and like he had seen things that I had done, and he had like listened to podcasts. Like, and I'm like, that's amazing. And the other guy that I think is the like is kind of great about that is like Will Ferrell. I think Will Ferrell is like very in touch with comedy and wanting to see comedy. Now, I'm saying I'm doing comedy, so I'm in touch with comedy. I'm a fan of comedy, but I think just getting up on stage and not being afraid to get up on stage and not being afraid to fail and not being afraid to be like, oh, someone came to see me because they liked the league or NTSF or whatever the fuck. And I'm not afraid that if I suck, like I think a lot of people feel like, they're going to be disappointed or they're going to be this or they're – I try to lose that. As a matter of fact, I just started doing a new live show. That's not a podcast. It's not anything. It's just sort of like a live show because I miss just doing a show for the fun of doing a show. I just want to do shows. Like, it's, I think we're losing that more and more with like everything's a podcast. Everything, every live show is a this, everything. It's like, just do a show that exists and you can walk away from. I love that feeling. And so, yeah, that's my long answer to that.
Yeah, that I feel like a very common piece of advice that people give is like fail. But that's I've always had trouble with that because it's like, what does that mean? What does that look like? It sounds like that looks like exactly what you just said, like never being okay with being good enough and being where you're at and just always like, I'm going to do this new thing.
It's like doing new things and also just sort of like, you will fail. Like, I will do a shitty Facebook show. I'll do many shitty Facebook shows. But it's not going to make me go, like, I need to hide away. I've talked to other people who stop performing. A lot of people I started out with in UCB, they don't perform at all. And they're afraid to perform. And that's weird and sad because it's sort of like you stop performing because you're too busy. Then you're like, well, now I'm too rusty. Then you get in there and you're like, now I'm second-guessing things. Now I'm like, oh, now I'm like, am I not – what you think I am. And there's so many like levels of this stuff. It's a very like, it can start to like drill you down. But like, I remember Will Ferrell took over our show, the Facebook show one night, because he had written the George Bush show, the Broadway show. And he's like, can I just try this out? And he had wrote it in, I guess, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And he just came to UCB, put it up on stage as a total surprise. He wasn't announced and boom, just did the show. We sat back and watched and it was awesome. And I always look at that and go like, man, that's amazing. Like, this is like Will Ferrell. Like, he is a comedy all-star, great dude, personable guy. And he's not getting caught up in the fact like, oh, I don't do that anymore. I don't get on stage. And, you know, he may not get on stage to do an improv show, and that's totally fine. But I think the ability to continue to always know where your roots are. If your roots are that which they are, like when people go, "Are you a stand-up?" I go, "No, I'm an improviser." So if my roots are that and I stop doing my roots, why? Yeah. I don't understand there. Why would there ever be a reason to, unless I'm not in a place where I can actually do it, you know?
Yeah, you got to tend.
Yeah, so I love, and we'll keep that show going for as long as we can. That's why we do shows with two people. And, you know, there are times where I'm like, I'm tired. It's a Wednesday night. I have two kids. And, like, the last thing I want to do is go out on a Wednesday night and do a show. But I do it. And I love it. And I love that I've done it. And I come home, and I'm invigorated, and my week feels better because of it.
Oh. What a great feeling.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
What a great long-form conversation. Yeah. So that was a long-form conversation. Tune in to the next episode when Paul Scheer will be your host.
Oh, my gosh.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery, the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beer. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.